This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega from WNYC and PRX in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
All this week for our series Laughing in Color, we're speaking with women of color who've made their mark in the comedy world. And we're asking you, whose moment is it in comedy right now?
My name is April, and I'm in Tampa, and I think the person who has killed me the most often is Eliza Schlesinger. She is hilarious and on point for everything topical that's happening now. Love her.
Hi, my name is Frankie. I'm calling from Olympia, Washington, and right now I think it is time for queers and women to have their moment in comedy. Been run for way too long by white men, which is really boring. In Seattle, Washington, my favorite comedians are Val Nigro and Clara Pluton.
Hey, this is Seth from Hannibal. Dave Chappelle is the current godfather of comedy, but Nikki Glaser and Sebastian Maniscalco are both underrated trailblazers in American comedy today.
This is Cami Bonaducci calling from Sun City Center, Florida. Without a doubt, it is Chelsea Handler lately. She's awesome. She's funny. And she touches on all the right subjects.
Thanks for talking with us, and keep telling us whose moment is it in comedy today at 877-8-MY-TAKE. In our first installment of the series, I spoke with Ellen Cleghorn of Saturday Night Live and Takiya Crystal Kima of In Living Color about their experiences doing sketch comedy in the 90s. Today, I'm talking with stand-up comedian Margaret Cho.
I really am Korean, but I have met people more Asian than me. I met a girl, her name was... I was like, oh, that's pretty. Do you spell that with a C or?
Margaret Cho is really more spiritually a 90s comic.
That's Yael Cohen, author of the book We Killed, The Rise of Women in American Comedy. And she says that Margaret was part of a wave of comedians who broke out by doing things a little differently than her predecessors.
That was the beginning of the alternative comedy scene, the group of people who kind of came out and said, we're not going to work in these comedy clubs anymore with a 2-drink minimum and a door fee. It was just too expensive. My friends can't go to it. It was also required a certain kind of joke style of humor that they were growing out of.
And for Soraya Nadia McDonald, culture critic for ESPN's The Undefeated, Margaret's work stood out for more than just its unique style.
She was really sort of brash. She was always open and welcoming to queer people. And she was always willing to talk about her experience, like being the kid of immigrants and what that was like.
I make fun of my mother a little bit, but I am so excited to share my success with her. You know, she didn't want me to be a stand-up comedian because she experienced so much racism and hatred coming to America in the 60s that she just could not believe that this country would accept her child. So the fact that I can be successful means to her on a very fundamental level that America somehow works and that things are getting better in her lifetime.
But by the time Margaret Cho was making it big, she had already been doing comedy for years. She was just 14 when she first stepped onto the stage.
We had a teacher who would sign us up for open mic nights at this club called The Other Cafe in San Francisco. And it was a place where you would go to see all sorts of people like Bobcat Goldthwait or Dana Carvey or Paula Poundstone. And we got signed up for their open mic nights and we would do these performances there. You know, it was odd because it was at an adult nightclub, but we could be there because we were performing.
And when Margaret was first starting out, she says she rarely crossed paths with other Asian American women in the comedy scene.
I felt like I needed to figure out a way to accept that I could be in comedy and not have to really ask anybody permission or not necessarily to have anybody who had sort of paved the way for me, you know, other than women in comedy. Of course, there were many women in comedy who I looked up to and who helped me actually a lot, but there were no Asian American women and very few women of color. So it was a really isolating experience, but at the same time, it was a good test in kind of seeing how brave I could be and to really explore. Nobody told me I couldn't do it exactly. It was just that I never saw examples of people like me doing it, but I just went along with it.
A couple years ago, I interviewed a performance artist who uses a lot of humor in her work. Her name is Christina Wong, And she's out in, well, she was at the time out in California. And a big reason why I was attracted to interviewing her was because she played on and really, you know, took on head on, if you will, the stereotype of white men who fetishize Asian women. And that was a big part of what she did, just trying to go against the whole docile, you know, Asian woman that's fetishized in this world and in this way. You said that you're willing to play off of Asian stereotypes in your work. How do you do that? How do you balance that?
Well, I love Christina. I think she's great. And I think it's really mostly just about adding a voice to whatever we regard as stereotypes or whatever we regard as these archetypes of people that we're sort of supposed to be or that mainstream culture designates us to be. And I think that the whole thing about submissive Asian women to me is quite a myth because I know relatively none. I don't think any of us are very, very docile or submissive, but there's sort of a fantasy that's kind of projected onto us. I think that maybe that they wish we were like that. I don't know. But it's fun to talk about it because it's like we have so little representation and then the ones that we have are really inaccurate. And so to play into that and to make fun of that, I think is really empowering and fun.
Now, we've seen even more recently Ali Wong, who's been both on television and she's just written a book and she's done a number of Netflix comedy specials. And her thing, or one of her things, is to really go into intra-Asian relations in her comedy, right? And talk a lot about things that perhaps, you know, a lot of folks in the audience may or may not be familiar with. Do you ever think about that, like how Asian audiences respond versus non-Asian audiences to that work? Or is it a question of really trying to have to appeal to white audiences versus other types of audiences?
I mean, I think that we have to look at the particulars of our culture. And even if the audience isn't necessarily always going to understand right away, it's the explaining that makes it really fun. And to understand the subtleties that exist within Asian Americans and within the different Asian American people, like, you know, I think it's really funny. And really, there's a lot of really astute observations that she makes. There's so much prejudice and colorism and judgment and internalized racism. It's a very complicated issue, you know, that we can be perceived as other by mainstream culture, and then we other others. It's really like, where does it stop? It's really funny.
Do comedians of color more broadly, and or do you feel that women of color comedians or you know, people who are non-white comedians, is it their responsibility to have, does their work have to mention race? Does it have to have a focus on race, or can it just be something that has nothing to do with race and still be funny?
I don't really know. I think that race figures into my personal life, my daily life, so much that it's hard to think about writing without that perspective. Like, we don't have that privilege to think that race is unimportant because it informs every interaction that we have, whether we are really aware of it or not. It really does. And so, you know, to use that awareness as an artist, I think is really important. I don't know if it necessarily is required from, you know, different performers. I think it's up to the individual. But for me as an artist, like, my writing couldn't be removed from my racial or ethnic or cultural identity. Like, my queerness, my gender, all of these things inform my worldview. And so I think it's just something that I would consider important to talk about just because I understand it affects me a lot.
We're in a moment right now, and part of the reason why we're exploring this topic in particular is because a lot of the conversation, you know, around comedy right now has been focused on men.
Yes.
It's been focused on male comedians. You know, I'm thinking Dave Chappelle in particular, who and others who have been, you know, sort of pushing back on this idea of quote unquote PC culture and woke culture and, you know, what they can and can't say. What's your thinking on that? I mean, is comedy, you know, one of the last places that should be touched when it comes to what people can and can't say? Should people be apologizing for, you know, routines that they did decades ago?
I think it depends on the artist. I think it's really up to them in their own conscience and what they feel about what they've said. And the thing about comedians is that you can't tell them what not to do, because they'll just do it. You know, the more somebody tells somebody not to do something, a comedian not to do something, they're going to do it more and more and more, because we're always trying to challenge the status quo, challenge people's thinking. I do think that woke culture has gone a long way in helping the way that we can equalize the world, that we can look to other and kind of become each other. And I think that's really important. I think that equality really begins with language and the way that we address each other. And then from that, it's really kind of up to people to decide what to do with it. And comedians are really rebellious. They don't want to be told what to do. They don't want to be defined by a culture. And so they're going to push back no matter what it is. It doesn't really mean anything other than we just are that way. And we're iconoclasts, I guess. That's what it is. It's something that we just are by nature, and the profession is by nature. So we're just going to reflect what's happening in society and in a very oppositional way.
And isn't there a part of that line of thinking, too, in terms of the saying the thing you're not supposed to say, that audiences gravitate to, that allows, you know, for some of that humor to come through, and some, even if it's uncomfortable? You know, I'm sure all of us have found ourselves, or most of us at least, have found ourselves laughing at something that we're like, I shouldn't be laughing at that, right?
Yeah, it's really naughty. It's really a way for us to be, you know, mischievous. It's a way to be, to get around the rules, to bend the rules. If you're clever enough to be able to make a joke about something that nobody wants to talk about, then you're kind of proud of that. Comedians are secretly proud of being bad, and we want to be nasty. It's just part of the nature of comedy, and it's really down to your skill on whether or not you get away with it. I think with Dave Chappelle, I mean, he's so good at what he does, he can kind of get away with anything because of the skill that is required to get around these subjects. So I think it sort of depends on who it is and how good you are at kind of letting that get through all of our own perceptions, all of our own filters, you know. And it doesn't work to have no filter, as we've seen a lot of people go down that, and it's hard. So it's about finessing it. So I think that's really what is important.
But do you feel, Margaret, that there are certain lines that you can't cross in your own work, or that you shouldn't cross, or that sort of keep you, you know, thinking, well, I don't really want to go there? And has that evolved over time?
I think it evolves. It's only that the only reason I wouldn't go somewhere is if I couldn't think of anything good enough to go there for. You know, like that's the whole point of it, is that if I can't think of something that is good enough to justify this terrible thing that I'm going to say, then I'm not able to do it. You know, it's really like I know my limitations as an artist and also kind of as a human being. So like I go, well, that's too deep for me, or this is too difficult, and I will stay away. Whether that is, you know, all of the different subjects that get people into a lot of trouble. Like, I think that I can talk about race to a certain extent. I can talk about gender to a certain extent. And there's things that I can really illuminate there. But then there's other places where I just don't understand. So it's hard. Like, I definitely think that you just have to be good enough to go there. And if you are, people appreciate it.
Another place that has been lacking in representation isn't just the comedy stage, it's also the television, you know, and TV. And we've seen that in particular. I mean, you tried doing an ABC sitcom called All American Girl. That was the first network sitcom to be led by an Asian American cast.
Oh, I've got news for you, Mom. I'm American. Eric is American. Even Stuart is American. Tell her.
I'll try. Mom.
What happened to the show? I mean, did you and ABC not see eye to eye? Was it right show, wrong time?
No, there were a lot of different issues. Partially, it was the Korean community at that time had just come out of the LA riots. And so they were incredibly protective of their public image, because the only thing that people had seen of Korean Americans basically were Korean shop owners standing on top of their buildings in South Central with rifles. It was a weird time. You know, 1994 was a fraught time in terms of race relations in Los Angeles in particular. And so the Korean community really rejected my presence because I am such a raunchy nightclub comedian. They were resentful of the fact that I was not a man. That's a patriarchal culture also. They didn't like my values. I was queer. I was way too feminist and way too naughty for them to really embrace me. And so they were protesting around the show. The network were very uncomfortable with that. And, you know, so there was a lot of issues that didn't have anything to do with the show itself. It just had to do with my presence as an artist. But in Koreatown, you know, in LA, all those people that were angry at what I was doing, they all died. So now I'm the one alive. I'm the elder. And I'm really welcoming to all of these comedians like Ellie Wong and everybody out there that's doing it, like Awkwafina and Ken Jeong and all these great, great people. So I feel very happy to be in the elder position now.
Another show that has lacked in Asian American representation is Saturday Night Live. They were most recently in the headlines because of Shane Gillis after he made racist jokes about Asian people. At the same time, Saturday Night Live hired one of their first Asian cast members. I mean, where does SNL stand? Are they still relevant when it comes to, you know, being on their stage and, you know, having to have a full slate of representative cast members? Because we talked to one of the first Black women to ever be on SNL, and she was like, look, it's their show. It's not our show.
Well, they did a great thing in hiring Bowen Yang, who is a friend of mine and a great comedian, and he's done great on the show so far. I like it. I think it's a great show. You know, it's historic. It's definitely something that appeals to a lot of people. But at the same time, there's a lot of places where we can shine, and we don't have to judge ourselves by their kind of like, you know, rules or their requirements or what they want or what they're trying to appeal to. I don't know the exact like importance of it now. You know, I think that it's had a lot of importance over the years. It may have waned at times, but I still think it's a great show. I still think that they need to have more representation of other kinds. And, you know, they do listen to the world. You know, when people say we want more female representation, we want more queer representation, they bring in different performers. So I feel like they definitely are an institution, whether it's mine or not, I don't know. I should host it though. That's what I've wanted to do forever.
And what are they saying? I mean, are they not extending the offer?
I don't know. They haven't yet. So I should.
What's up with that? It's been a while. I mean, you know, they've been on the air a little for over 40 years. I mean, you're an icon. Like, what's up with that?
I know. It's crazy. But when they had Awkwafina hosting, it was the first time in, I think, 26 years that they had another Asian American host. I think the last one before that was Lucy Liu. So the long time, long time.
You can't see, but I just kind of dropped my jaw for a minute because that's kind of insane.
It is crazy. It is crazy.
Margaret, whose moment is it in comedy today?
I really think it really belongs to people like Ali Wong. I think that she's really doing such a great job in kind of taking that comedic voice and lending it to different types of scripts, whether it's her own movie, like Always Be My Maybe. All the stuff that she's done with Netflix is really incredible. So I really am excited about that. I think she's really amazing. I think that there's a lot of different people that are doing great, great, great stuff. And so I'm really a fan of Ali's.
And is there anything else besides SNL that you're looking forward to doing?
Yes, I do really enjoy doing stand-up comedy. And so I'm really out there on the road all the time doing that and doing different kinds of shows all over. I'm doing a lot more acting these days, which for me is really gratifying. I don't know what it is that's kind of made it possible for me to be doing that more. Maybe it's that thing of, you know, whether Crazy Rich Asians had a part in that, but it's really expanded the idea of where people want to see Asian Americans in media. And so that's been very, very helpful.
Margaret Cho is a comedian and actor. Margaret, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, we continue our series Laughing in Color with stand-up comedian and actor Cristela Alonso. And you can find all the segments from our series at thetakeaway.org/comedy. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.